This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Earlier today, an historic event took place in the Jordanian port city of Aqaba. President Bush met with the Israeli and Palestinian prime ministers in an effort to take the first steps toward a lasting peace agreement. Prime Minister Sharon promised to eliminate illegal Israeli outposts, and Prime Minister Abbas renounced terrorism. But as important as the concessions and expressions of goodwill is the fact that Prime Minister Ariel Sharon and Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas met in public as equals, and that an American president who'd been reluctant to immerse himself in Middle East politics is now fully engaged in the process. In a few minutes, we'll listen to some of what each of the three leaders had to say today. But first, NPR's Peter Kenyon joins us from Aqaba, Jordan. And Peter, good to have you on the program, as always.
Hi, Neil. How are you?
Can you describe for us what happened today?
Well, it was a meeting of low expectations, and those expectations were met. And I'm actually quoting the president, who used those very words, close to those exact words, on the plane as he left afterwards to reporters. There was a good atmosphere of the meetings. The probably one of the most important things, according to the officials that I spoke with on both sides, is that while the bilateral meetings were going on in other rooms in the summer palace of King Abdullah, the ministers, the cabinet ministers from Israel and the Palestinian Authority, just decided to get up and meet and go discuss things and try to make some progress on actually cooperating on matters of security. The defense minister for Israel met with the security chief for the Palestinian Authority. The two finance ministers met. So we had a sort of a spontaneous eruption of cooperation, which may not sound like much back in Washington, but certainly here in the Middle East, it's quite a big deal. So as I say, there were positive comments were made. Everybody got at least to the minimum point that they were supposed to keep this process moving, and President Bush said he's going to remain engaged and try and make sure that it stays moving.
There were some symbolism, as always, in these kinds of meetings, this time a dramatic bridge crossing.
Yes, that's right. In fact, they had to make sure that the bridge would fit everybody and get it all in the television shot, and there was a lot of symbolism involved in this. Certainly, there wasn't any hope of major breakthroughs, but as you mentioned, there was the comment from Prime Minister Sharon that they would begin immediately to dismantle what they call the illegal settlement outposts. Critics, of course, say that all the settlements are illegal under international law, but that's a much thornier issue that will not be addressed most likely in the first phase of this three-year roadmap for the Middle East peace process. We also heard very strong condemnation of terrorism by Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian prime minister, who went on to say in what the U.S. officials later said seemed to go beyond the expectations of him, he went on to say that they would be an active part in the international war against terrorism, and he called on Arab governments to stop funding terrorism. So good signs on that point.
Were there any surprises in President Bush's speech?
Well, there was a lot of speculation about whether a phrase was inserted at the last minute saying that he recognized Israel as a vibrant Jewish state, which is a nod to the Israeli deep fear that a peace agreement will bring a flood of Palestinian refugees who are claiming a right of return to their old towns, which are now, of course, in Israel, and that would dilute and eventually overwhelm the Jewish character of the State of Israel. That one brief comment from President Bush today was seen as a nod in that direction and was very encouraging to the Israelis.
Ever since this meeting was announced, the U.S. position was always that the summit would take place if conditions allowed, and that was an expression, I guess, of fears of something terrible happening that would derail this this summit meeting. In the event, things have been quiet in Israel for the past few days. Is this people holding their breath?
Yes, quite a few people are holding their breath. It is rare, actually, that a serious move toward peace would be made without some militant group trying to derail it with a suicide bombing or a shooting attack. What we're actually hearing from militant groups such as Hamas and Islamic Jihad, we're seeing their leaders on television talking about their conditions for stopping the attacks. And we're hearing Hamas say that they will curtail their attacks, provided that there's a withdrawal of Israeli troops. And this gets into a very tricky area of security cooperation. Will the Palestinian security forces be trained and ready and armed and able to take over the role of quelling the violence. But certainly, at the moment, things are still quiet.
Now, you are in Aqaba. The presidential party has moved on to Qatar, the last stop on this Middle East tour.
That's right. The president himself left quite soon after the meeting. He's already been in Qatar now for a couple of hours at least. And the rest of the traveling press pool will be there shortly. And that will be a more patriotic finish to this long and varied trip with a speech to the troops, and certainly then a long trip home for him. I should add, Neil, that while all this positive symbolism was going on here, back in Jerusalem, tens of thousands of right-wing Israelis were meeting to protest this summit, and their lesson was, according to their chants anyway, Oslo's lesson is don't give a state to terror, and among those present were some cabinet ministers in the Sharon government, so clearly there's some major obstacles here on the Mideast peace front still to overcome.
Well, thanks very much for joining us, NPR's Peter Kenyon from Aqaba, Jordan. For the rest of this hour, we're going to talk about what was said today, what was not said, and what all of it may mean for diplomatic relations between Israelis and Palestinians, and how the U.S. Is going to be involved and how it could affect us. Join the conversation. What are your questions about the roadmap and the significance of today's meeting? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us here in Studio 3A, as they so often have, is we discuss the Middle East, are Robert Malley, a director of the Middle East Program at the International Crisis Group here in Washington. He's also a former special assistant to President Clinton for Arab-Israeli Affairs. Good to have you back.
My pleasure.
And Dennis Ross is also with us, a distinguished fellow and counselor at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy and former special envoy to the Middle East from 1993 to 2001. And it's good to have you in the studio.
Nice to be here.
Let's go now and listen to parts of the statements from today's gathering. The first person to speak was the host of today's event, King Abdullah of Jordan. He then introduced Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas. His opening remarks included thanks to President Bush, who he said took the longest journey for peace of all of us. And here's some more of what he had to say.
It is time to bring all this suffering to an end. Just as Israel must meet its responsibilities, we, the Palestinians, will fulfill our obligations for this endeavor to succeed. We are ready to do our part. Let me be very clear. There will be no military solution to this conflict, so we repeat our denunciation and renunciation of terrorism against the Israelis, wherever they might be. Such methods are inconsistent with our religious and moral traditions and are a dangerous obstacle to the achievement of an independent, sovereign state we seek. These methods also conflict with the kinds of state we wish to build based on human rights and the rule of law. We will exert all of our efforts using all our resources to end the militarization of the Intifada, and we will succeed. The armed Intifada must end, and we must use and resort to peaceful means in our quest to end the occupation and the suffering of Palestinians and Israelis and to establish the Palestinian state. We emphasize our determination to implement our pledges, which we have made for our people and the international community, and that is a rule of law, single political authority, weapons only in the hands of those who are in charge of upholding the law and order, and political diversity within the framework of democracy. Our goal is clear, and we will implement it firmly and without compromise. A complete end to violence and terrorism.
The Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas speaking today in Jordan. We heard his words with the help of an interpreter. Now, Dennis Ross, this is in many ways the first major public political appearance for Mahmoud Abbas. What did you hear in what he had to say? What was different? What was new?
Well, what I heard him say today, which was very important, which goes beyond even what he said before when he spoke to the Palestinian Legislative Council right before they voted him in as prime minister, was that terror and violence was not only wrong for religious and moral reasons, which he said then, but that actually it would be an obstacle to the achievement of an independent sovereign state, which the Palestinians seek. He was justifying why it was important, it seems to me, to confront those who are determined to continue to use terror and violence. He was making clear again his determination on behalf of the Palestinian Authority to fulfill their obligations, something else that he emphasized, I think, maybe with greater vigor today than before. But maybe most important, I think, was his saying those who pursue terror and violence are destroying our objective, are denying us what we seek. And when he does that, he creates much more of a basis on which to have the Palestinians make it clear that terror and violence is simply never going to be justified. And when he emphasizes that we can only use peaceful means to achieve our goals, I think he establishes a new baseline for Palestinians, and he also sends an extremely important signal to the Israelis.
Robert Malley, what were you hoping to hear that you didn't hear, or what are you expecting to hear that you didn't hear?
No, first of all, I think this was a very scripted event, and this not necessarily negative. In fact, I think the Bush administration did a very good job of preparing the speeches that all three sides would give, and each side knew what the other one was going to say, basically, and you could see it when you see how President Bush refers to what both the Prime Minister of Israel and the Prime Minister of the Palestinian Authority had to say. So I don't think there were any surprises. I think he said everything he needed to say. The headline in the Israeli press that's already coming on the Internet is "The Armed Intifada Must End." That's what so many Israelis have wanted to hear for a long time. Now the challenge will be to convince the Palestinians that that's the right course of action, in particular the radical groups that have continued to maintain the military operations. And to do that, he's going to have to continue saying what he's been saying, and he's going to need some heavy help from Israel and from the United States.
Let's get a listener involved. Alex joins us from Palo Alto in California.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, I just wanted to say before my question is that people should read an excellent article by a Jewish-American journalist, Jeffrey Blankfort, in this month's issue of Counterpunch magazine, which it can be found at counterpunch.org. And his article is about how Israel has hijacked the roadmap. And he points out how Israel and Sharon won't be making...
Alex, if he were calling, we'd be happy to discuss those things. You're calling. What's your question?
Oh, yes. I'm just wondering, you know, how long will it take for Israel to start blaming Mahmoud Abbas instead of Yasser Arafat for every bombing in Israel, in spite of whoever actually claims responsibility for it?
Mm-hmm. That's going to be a question that's going to come up. Robert Malley, we've not had bombings in recent days to derail this meeting, but that seems, you hate to be pessimistic, but that seems a matter of time.
And the fact that we haven't had them doesn't mean that they haven't been tried, and that's something that, any moment of quiet doesn't necessarily mean that there is actual quiet. But one of the big tests of the roadmap of the process is going to be how it reacts to the inevitable bumps, and the bumps, and that's a charitable word for what it really is, but you may have terrorist attacks, you may also have military attacks by Israel, and how the two sides are going to react to it, whether they're going to be prepared to continue with their steps despite the inevitable steps that would be taken by those who don't want to see the process go forward, mm-hmm. will be a test of Israel's commitment, the Palestinians' commitment, and also of President Bush's commitment. But there's no doubt in my mind that we're going to see more violence on both sides before this process comes to an end.
And the other name that was mentioned in that question, we're not going to have time to get to it in this segment, but that is the name of Yasser Arafat, still president, still the most popular and charismatic politician in the Palestinian territories, and yet a figure who will have to be reckoned with at some point, and we'll have to see how he responds to what happened today in Aqaba. We're talking about the steps being made to a possible peace in the Middle East, and when we come back from a break, we'll take more of your calls at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We'll hear an excerpt of what Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon had to say and some of what President Bush had to say as well. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the possibility of the Middle East peace, the roadmap to peace, an important meeting held today in Aqaba, Jordan, as the prime ministers of Israel and the Palestinians met with President Bush. Were you hopeful about what you saw today in Jordan? Give us a phone call. 800-989-8255. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Our guests are both with us here in Studio 3A. Dennis Ross served as Special Envoy to the Middle East from 1993 to 2001, and Robert Malley is a former Special Assistant to President Clinton for Arab-Israeli Affairs. Part of our conversation this hour includes listening to what the three leaders had to say and putting their statements in perspective. Earlier, we heard remarks of Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas. After he spoke, Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon took the microphone. He, too, said he was hopeful for a new opportunity for peace between Israelis and Palestinians. Here's Prime Minister Sharon.
It is in Israel's interest not to govern the Palestinians, but for the Palestinians to govern themselves in their own state. A democratic Palestinian state, fully at peace with Israel, will promote the long-term security and well-being of Israel as a Jewish state. There can be no peace, however, without the abandonment and elimination of terrorism, violence, and incitement. We will work alongside Palestinians and other states to fight terrorism, violence, and incitement of all kinds. As all parties perform their obligations, we will seek to restore normal Palestinian life, improve the humanitarian situation, rebuild trust, and promote progress toward the president's vision. We will act in a manner that respects the dignity as well as the human rights of all people. We can also reassure our Palestinian partners that we understand the importance of territorial contiguity in the West Bank for a viable Palestinian state. Israeli policy in the territories that are subject to direct negotiations with the Palestinians will reflect this fact. We accept the principle that no unilateral actions by any party can prejudge the outcome of our negotiations. In regard to the unauthorized outposts, I want to reiterate that Israel is a society governed by the rule of law. Thus, we will immediately begin to remove unauthorized outposts.
Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon speaking in Jordan earlier today. And Robert Malley, I guess the headline would be the pledge to remove those unauthorized outposts, a way of avoiding the phrase illegal settlements, which, as we heard earlier from Peter Kenyon, gets involved in all kinds of, as so much in the Middle East, the terminology is very delicate.
And here it's more than terminology. It really is what's happening on the ground. I mean, I think today was a very good day. I think the last 2 weeks have been very good 2 weeks. But in the meantime, the settlement enterprise has not ceased. And people will tell you who've been there that it's continued to grow to a point where it becomes harder and harder to achieve the kind of contiguous, viable Palestinian state that President Bush has spoken of. So it is a welcome fact to see Israel will remove the unauthorized outposts. But how they define authorized and unauthorized is a big question. Even among the lists that the Americans have given, the administration has given Israel, of many, many tens and tens of what they consider illegal outposts, only a fraction at this point will probably be affected by what Prime Minister Sharon has said. And that is one of the issues that's going to have to be watched very carefully, because as in the past, it could be one of the main obstacles to moving forward.
Dennis Ross, another word we heard in there, maybe the buzzword of the day, is contiguity. First of all, tell us what it means, and is it important that it was uttered by Ariel Sharon?
Well, it is, because it goes to the heart of what is a Palestinian concern, that the territory would be so carved up, separated by roads, separated by settlements, that they would not have the territorial integrity that you would need, or contiguity, for a state to be viable. So here you have Ariel Sharon, in my mind, using three kinds of phrases that I really hadn't heard him use before. One was he addresses the Palestinians explicitly to say he understands the importance of territorial contiguity to them so that they can have a viable state. Two, he also emphasizes there'll be no unilateral actions. I can tell you, and Rob knows this very well, this is something we worked on for a long time, to deal with the imagery, at least, that Israel would take steps on their own without regard to what the Palestinians were doing. And settlements were sort of the embodiment of that. And you certainly see the president in his own statements drawing a linkage between settlement activity and unilateral action. So I do believe what you have, at least today, are very important statements that begin to cross thresholds on the Israeli side and statements on the Palestinian side that also are designed to delegitimize the very idea of terror and violence. That, psychologically, is important. Now, can you translate the intentions on each side into a reality? That's going to be the test of this process.
Robert Malley, earlier the Israeli Prime Minister used the word occupation to describe Israeli practices in the Palestinian territories. And another phrase that he used today, perhaps not quite as loaded, but he addressed our Palestinian partners, making it clear that, well, of course, he was not talking about Mr. Arafat, who is most definitely not a partner.
Right. Well, he's the person who was not invited and yet whose shadow was all over the meeting. I mean, for somebody who's been declared irrelevant so many times, is an extraordinary amount of obsession with him. I would say, you know, clearly what's happening now is a weakening of his role. I think it's a mistake, though, to believe that he has no role, no influence. He has great influence, partly because he is the recognized leader of the Palestinian people, partly because he's going to become the vehicle, the magnet, of any disappointment with Abu Mazen. All groups among Palestinians who are not happy with the direction Abu Mazen has taken is going to use the fact that Arafat is now secluded in a two-room building and will focus their energies through him to try to undercut what Abu Mazen is doing. And so far, Arafat and Abu Mazen have had a very uneasy relationship in this new structure where Abu Mazen is the prime minister and Arafat is the president. But that could become more complicated, and I think that if Arafat sees no incentive in this process, he may do what he can to try to disrupt it, and that could be another big obstacle that people have to take into account.
And for those who are confused, Abu Mazen is another name used
by
Mahmoud Abbas.
Among his friends.
Now let's get another caller in. Suzanne joins us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling as a Palestinian American. I'm still refreshed despite the many times that we've gone back to the peace talks, but this time I feel it has to be done, especially with our invasion of Iraq, and I don't agree with that. However, at least it's made President Bush realize this has to be resolved, and the two partners, the Palestinians and the Israeli prime ministers, know something has to be done. But the biggest worry I have as an American is the fact that what's the guarantee that this will continue in 3 years, depending on which administration takes over? How do your guests feel about that?
Mm-hmm. Good question, Suzanne. And Dennis Ross, you've been through this a number of times. It's not merely who gets elected president. It's what happens once the election campaign gets started, isn't it?
I think that can affect the climate in which the work takes place. But having worked at a senior level in both a Republican and a Democratic administration, this is an issue where if there's an agreement on the course of action, then I think it can be sustained regardless of a change in administration. There was not that agreement at the end of the Clinton administration with the advent of the Bush administration. The Bush administration made a decision to draw back. Now it's making a decision to go ahead, and I think the decision it's making will be supported by Democrats and Republicans alike. So I think this may be something that can be sustainable. Clearly, there's one big issue for both sides that I think has become more prominent than anything else, and I'm talking about the Israelis and Palestinians,
mm-hmm.
and that is the situation simply could not go on as it was. The price that was being paid was simply too high. Both sides understood it was a disaster. They have to find a way to break it. They have to find a way to get back to pursuing peace. They have to find a way to get back to establishing normal life again. I think if that's the case and you have this process and it begins to unfold, and I'm the last one to say it isn't going to have all sorts of problems along the way, it will. This is going to be much harder than anybody thinks, except for maybe some of us who endured before. It's going to be very difficult, but I do think there is a basis now on which to move forward, and I think politically it can be sustainable. Obviously, it depends upon the nature of some of the challenges we see along the way.
Earlier, we heard excerpts of the remarks of Prime Minister Abbas and Prime Minister Sharon after they spoke today in Jordan. President Bush delivered a statement of his own. He said the Holy Land must be shared between two states and went on from there.
I welcome Prime Minister Sharon's pledge to improve the humanitarian situation in the Palestinian areas and to begin removing unauthorized outposts immediately. I appreciate his gestures of reconciliation on behalf of prisoners and their families, and his frank statements about the need for territorial contiguity. As I said yesterday, the issue of settlements must be addressed for peace to be achieved. In addition, Prime Minister Sharon has stated that no unilateral actions by either side can or should prejudge the outcome of future negotiations. The Prime Minister also recognizes that it is in Israel's own interest for Palestinians to govern themselves in their own state. These are meaningful signs of respect for the rights of the Palestinians and their hopes for a viable, democratic, peaceful Palestinian state. Prime Minister Abbas recognizes that terrorist crimes are a dangerous obstacle to the independent state his people seek. He agrees that the process for achieving that state is through peaceful negotiations. He has pledged to consolidate Palestinian institutions, including the security forces, and to make them more accountable and more democratic. He has promised his full efforts and resources to end the armed intifada. He has promised to work without compromise for a complete end of violence and terror. In all these efforts, the Prime Minister is demonstrating his leadership and commitment to building a better future for the Palestinian people. Both prime ministers here agree that progress toward peace also requires an end to violence and the elimination of all forms of hatred and prejudice and official incitement in school books, in broadcasts, and in the words used by political leaders. Both leaders understand that a future of peace cannot be founded on hatred and falsehood and bitterness.
President Bush speaking earlier today at the summit meeting in Aqaba, Jordan. And Dennis Ross, given what the president had to say today, how important do you regard what he did yesterday at the meeting with American Arab allies at Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt? How important was that as a prelude to what happened today?
I think it was very important. One of the things he needed to do was to elevate Abu Mazen as the Palestinian prime minister. One way to do that is not simply by meeting with he and Ariel Sharon, but also by meeting with him in a larger Arab context. That made him the equal, at least in terms of visibility and appearance, of these other Arab leaders on the one hand, and on the other hand, it made them much more embracing of him as a symbol of who was now going to be representing the Palestinians as they undertook obligations. So the two together, I think, are very important to build up Abu Mazen's stature, because you have to realize he has always been a private person. He's always been the insider. He never had visibility among the Palestinian people. If he's going to undertake obligations that may not be so easy to fulfill, he has to build his authority. Now, ultimately, he builds his authority only by producing, by delivering, by making life better. And he needs the Israeli help for that. He needs our help for it. He needs the Arab help for it. But he also gets the benefit of, I think, time from his own people. The more he is seen as being a leader who has the backing of the Arabs, he also gets the benefit of a recognition that perhaps he should be supported again if he shows that he has this kind of level of support from the outside, especially from Arab leaders.
Dennis Ross and Robert Malley are helping us analyze the Aqaba summit. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Here's an email we got from Ben Osborne in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Is there anything historically significant happening right now aside from rhetoric and symbolic matters, or is it too early to distinguish the roadmap from other periods of negotiation? Is the roadmap significantly different from previous attempts at negotiations, or is it simply a matter of both sides once again coming to the table as they have in the past? Thank you. Robert Malley, why don't you take the first shot at that?
Well, I mean, at some level, the roadmap is not different from what we've seen in the past, and paradoxically, it was greeted with more skepticism than some of the previous attempts that had been put on the table, whether it's the Mitchell report, whether it had been something that George Tenet, the head of the CIA, had put on the table. This one was greeted with skepticism because it has a lot of flaws, and I think both Israelis and Palestinians see it. And yet, despite the skepticism, it's managed to produce more movement than any other element has in the past 2.5 years. I think what that reflects, ultimately, is that this process won't move on the basis of plans and of plans that are concocted here or elsewhere. They really are a function of the politics among the Palestinians, the politics among Israelis, and the politics in the United States. Those politics now are more ripe than they have been in some time, which is not saying much because the confidence and the trust in the situation has gotten so bad. But you do see on the Palestinian side and on the Israeli side, I believe, a sense that both sides have experienced the force of violence and they've experienced the futility of violence. In other words, they know how much they can suffer and inflict suffering through violence, but they also know that they can't achieve anything political through violence. And so both have come to the point where they realize, the peoples at least, that they need to move forward. And I think President Bush, who has started his presidency as somebody who was uninterested in this process, is getting sucked in. So the political stars are being slightly realigned, nothing like what we had several years ago, but a big difference from where we were just a few months ago. And again, it's that political dimension, much more than the plans that are on the table, that could produce movement.
Dennis Ross, a few moments ago you spoke about, you know, well, this may not be perfect, but what's the alternative? They had to do something. Yet critics will question President Bush's commitment to this process, even now after this meeting. They will question Prime Minister Sharon's sincerity in getting involved in the peace process, and they will question the Prime Minister Abbas's ability to deliver the goods. There's a lot to question here.
Well, there are a lot of reasons to be questioning. But I think there is also a new reality, at least on the ground, in terms of where both sides are coming from and also where I think the president is coming from. He may not have been enthusiastic about getting involved in this, but I think anybody who looked at the pictures yesterday, one found, and I say this as a longtime participant and now observer, I see a president who has the bug. Every president seems to get the bug that they can do something about this problem. Now, we are dealing with a reality that is so grim, so desperate on each side. We've fallen so far from where we were, that we can only begin to move upward. I think right now what the president did offers us a new beginning. It is going to be very difficult to pursue this over time. We will have all sorts of obstacles along the way. But I don't think there's any question that the two sides, certainly Israelis and Palestinians, realize they've got to come up with something different because the pain that each was enduring was simply too great. So that's a baseline from which to work. We haven't taken on any of the core issues. We're just starting. We're not dealing with the definition of the powers of a state or its borders or its capital. So I think let's understand we do have a long ways to go, but we do have a place to begin, and given where we have come from, this is an important starting point.
Dennis Ross, thank you for being with us today. Robert Malley as well. Good to have you both. Robert Malley, the director of the Middle East Program at the International Crisis Group here in Washington, D.C., a former advisor to President Clinton on such affairs, and Dennis Ross, a distinguished fellow and counselor at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. When we come back from a break, we'll hear how Tony Blair in Britain defended his policy on weapons of mass destruction. It's the talk of the nation from NPR News.